Welcome in to the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I was scheduled to be joined by my cousin Shane, who skipped out on about 20 podcasts in a row, but bad news. Waiting for Shane's internet company to show up. Apparently, they've even pushed it back even further. So I'm going to stop giving deadlines for the old Tennessee Homer because I don't know when the hell he's going to show up. But hopefully, Charter Internet, not a sponsor, not going to be a sponsor based on their customer service there of the Tennessee Homer out in East Tennessee. But I kid, Charter, we welcome your money if you want to give it to us.
Cable guy, I swear, I'm done. Absolutely done. So, as you know, I've been trying to get through cable through the electric company, which probably is my first mistake. I mean, obviously, they focus on, but they don't even keep the electricity on. Let's be honest. My power is down about 15 times last year, not even storm related. So why am I going to put all my precious internet and money into the backbone of the Appalachian Electric Company? But here I am buying in because they sold me on this 2 gig fiber optic. So I put in a ticket. Lady says it's going to be about 30 days, which is perfect because we were moving in about that time. She says you'll have to get a router, but we'll have the guys out there. We got you set up. You're going to have 2,000 gigs. I was like, all right, sounds good. So, you know, me naturally am excited. I have not had internet in how long? You know what I'm saying? I've been on HughesNet. In fact, I don't even use HughesNet. It's so slow. I'd rather download shit to my phone and just go with it. You know what I'm saying? So I just had to go to the extreme. I got pumped up. I got wrapped up. I bought the sticker. I'm in. I'm all in. Trying life for life. So I'm waiting around. I called the morning of, and I said, hey, I said, you guys going to be out here? I haven't heard anything. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll be there. 2 to 4. 2 to 4, we'll be there. So like a fucking kid, I'm sitting out here on the back porch waiting for this guy to pull up. I'm checking my windows. I keep rolling them up, rolling them down. Imagine this, for 2 hours. So 4:15 rolls around, and I'm a little frustrated because it's starting to rain. I'm like, oh, he's going to make some excuse. He can't do it because it's raining outside, whatever. So then I get on my email, and I noticed there was an email coming across at 11 o'clock. Why that's important is because I just called them at 10 o'clock, and they said they were going to do it. 11 o'clock, they said they can't. I sent you that email. They said, hey, we're going to push this thing off till Tuesday. And I'm like, you know, it's this far. I'm this far in. I'm committed. I'm like, okay, you know what? I took the day off for this thing. I won't be there, but it works out perfect because I'm off Wednesday, Thursday. You know, I'm probably going to stream Netflix all weekend long. It's going to be great. I bought it, you know. I took it, hook, line, and sinker. Tuesday rolls around today. Daughter calls me and says, the guy says he can't do it. I said, what do you mean the guy says he can't do it? He can't do it. Ends up, the back half of the neighborhood has the fiber optics. Front half of the neighborhood doesn't have it just yet, but will in another week. And I'm pissed because now here I've waited already a month and now an additional 5 days only to find out it ain't happening. You know, I mean, what is it? Is it another week after that? Probably. And the problem is I just don't believe them. I'll never forget. I was flying back from California and we were in Atlanta and the guy says, hey, it's going to be 30 minutes behind schedule. And I was like, okay, 30 minutes, whatever. Then another delay, 30 minutes beyond that. But they're doing these delays like every 15, 20 minutes. Well, next thing you know, I'm sitting in Atlanta for like 8 hours. I could have easily have drove to Knoxville, but instead I waited around because they kept messing around with the 15 minutes here, 20 minutes here, whatever. So I'm having kind of like a flashback of this scenario, and I'm like, I'm not going to do it. I'm sitting here at the house. Literally, I come home, I sit at the couch, looking at a TV that doesn't even work. man. You know what I'm saying? And my cell phone's not as good here, so that's why we've not been able to do the damn podcast. You know, I could barely watch a TikTok video, nonetheless Skype an audio file with you. So I said, the hell with it. I ain't doing it. I'm done with them. So I called Charter, and I hate Charter, but I was like, can you guys get out here? You know, I look like my hands folded, you know, take me back, you know, whatever you got. I said, I don't give a shit if it's dial up. Just can you get out here tomorrow? And they said they'd mail me a box. So I'll have internet tomorrow, but damn, it has been a wild ride, brother. A wild ride indeed.
Because we don't got Cousin Shane on the line, we got a terrific guest on the show, Mike Griffith from the AJC's Dog Nation. You know him from the Paul Feinbaum Show and all the fine work he does covering the Georgia Bulldogs for Dog Nation. He's covered Tennessee, he's covered Alabama, he's covered Auburn. He's been all over the SEC, so we're going to have him join the line in just a minute. We've got coach comments from Sam Pittman up there in Arkansas after landing his contract extension. An update on Kentucky standout running back Chris Rodriguez. But before we get to all that, another friend of the show, Danny Sheridan, issued some updated point spreads out of Las Vegas for a number of SEC games. And if you don't know Danny, you know, I don't know what the hell you're doing with yourself. You're not a fan of gambling, because that man's been covering it for decades. Based out of the state of Alabama, he's on the Paul Feinbaum Show all the time. Those are some of the best Feinbaum shows out there when Danny makes an appearance. But with that in mind, he's got some of the Alabama and Auburn game spreads as well as some Georgia spreads. So I'm going to go over these and then give you two that I really like to bet on. If maybe you're one of these people that don't like to gamble on online sites, you walk into the South Point Casino down in Las Vegas, you can place money on these now. But Alabama, 16-point favorite on the road at Texas, week two of the season. No surprise there. No respect for the Longhorns. They don't deserve it. Alabama more than a two-touchdown favorite in Austin. Alabama 14.5-point favorite over Texas A&M in the middle of the season there when the Aggies come to town. That's an interesting one. Tennessee at Tennessee. Alabama 10.5-point favorite in Neyland Stadium. What? Matt Hayes up here saying Tennessee might beat Alabama. 10.5-point spread suggests otherwise. Alabama, a 15-point favorite on the road in Death Valley against Brian Kelly's LSU Tigers. That's first year down there, of course, so we'll see what former Notre Dame coach has got cooking in the SEC. Alabama, 11-point favorite on the road at Ole Miss. The Arkansas line's not even on here. Oh, the disrespect on that one. But a 21-point favorite, the Crimson Tide are in the Iron Bowl. Still, I'm a little bit upset the more I'm just sitting here looking at it. Why in the hell is the Arkansas spread not on here? Ooh, that would probably be my pick if I could, but people tired of me hyping up the Hogs. So Georgia, 17-point favorite over Auburn. No surprise there, I don't think. How about this one? Georgia, 15-point favorite over Florida in Jacksonville, of course. And then two more Auburn spreads here. Auburn, now listed, this is pretty unbelievable, as a 1-point favorite over Penn State week three of the season, I believe it is. So, man, that'd be one hell of a win there for Brian Harsin to get some momentum in year two. And then last but not least, Texas A&M, 4-point favorite on the road at Auburn. That has always been a very interesting game. Tough to predict, but that is the one that I'm kind of, if I'm putting money down today, Texas A&M, only a 4-point favorite over Auburn. I think I'm hammering that line, hammering the Aggies and the four. I think they should be about a 7 to 8-point favorite on the road at Auburn. And one other one, speaking of Texas A&M, feeling like showing the Aggies a ton of love, how about this 14.5-point spread? I know it's on the road at Alabama. Alabama revenge, all this. I think a little bit of the luster on Alabama wears off when you beat them. And you could say, what the hell are you talking about? They win damn near every game. That's true. But we've seen it before. Ole Miss under Hugh Freeze able to knock off the Crimson Tide in back-to-back seasons. We've seen Clemson beat Alabama multiple times. I'm not sitting here crazy enough to predict Texas A&M to go into Tuscaloosa and pull the upset, but 14.5 points, a little too rich for my blood the more I think about it. I think A&M knows they can play with Alabama, and I think that's going to be another tight ball game. All these coaching feuds be damned. I think A&M's going to be ready to play against Alabama. Of course, who the hell knows? Predicting games out here, middle of the season. We got to see how these teams look on the field. But those are the lines from Danny Sheridan. Just thought I would share those, get a little conversation going here around the SEC. Drop us in your comments, what you think if you're watching on YouTube. But let's kick all things down to Kentucky. We got a little update here for Chris Rodriguez. All right, so some potentially good news for the Wildcats. You know, all kinds of speculation on where this thing stands with Chris Rodriguez, their outstanding running back that is poised to break the Kentucky school rushing record. Well, he may not be doing it now because we don't even know if he's going to be on the field. But according to Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio posted an article here late Tuesday afternoon. Chris Rodriguez has reported with the rest of his teammates there in Kentucky. That's the first sign that he's going to be welcomed back on the field in Lexington this season. So there's hope right there. I've been trying to get to the bottom of what's going on with Chris Rodriguez. Can't really get to the bottom of it. And Nick Roush doesn't really mention it either, but he does anticipate that Chris Rodriguez will still be suspended and miss some games. But the fact that he's graduated already and he's still a member of the team, hell, he wouldn't be showing up if he didn't have to, if there wasn't a glimmer of hope that he could get on the field for the Kentucky Wildcats. So we'll certainly continue to monitor this situation, but Kentucky is going to need this guy, particularly early in the season when they go down to Florida. Will he even be available? We don't know. And they sure as hell are going to need him if they're going to pull off that massive upset late in the season at Tennessee. No, I'm kidding. At Georgia. Hosting Georgia. That's the one that obviously Bulldogs are going to be a heavy favorite entering the season to win the East, beat Kentucky and all that. But, you know, Kentucky needs a guy like Chris Rodriguez. If they are going to beat Tennessee, if they are going to beat Georgia, you need those star players. And Chris Rodriguez is one of the few that Kentucky has established on that offensive side of the ball entering the season. Just would be a massive blow if he can't play this fall. But next, let's kick it all day to Fayetteville, where Sam Pittman talked about his recent contract extension. Again, if you missed it last week, five-year deal, I believe it is, $5 million per season for Sam Pittman. If he wins 7 games in a season, he gets an automatic one-year extension, kind of like Mark Stoops has got down there in Kentucky, a very incentive-laden contract here for Sam Pittman. I think there's also a clause where if he doesn't win half his games, you know, his buyout is very, very low. So he's got to keep winning. But now he's paid. And they didn't have to back up the Brinks truck to old Sam Pittman's house to get him either. I mean, he's still the 9th highest paid coach in the SEC. He's well worth that based on what he's done so far there in Fayetteville. Again, I've said it time and time again. I think he's done a fantastic job the last 2 years. Maybe the best 2-year job in the SEC the last 2 years. And now he gets rewarded with a lot heftier of a payday. It's official. And Sam Pittman met with the media here on Tuesday to talk about it. And it was a lot of appreciation, a little bit him explaining the non-compete. He's got a non-compete in his contract. He cannot go to another SEC school. And that little juicy tidbit here, that was put in there because apparently his agent, if you don't know, Jimmy Sexton, just hired Jimmy Sexton leading up to this contract negotiation. But he represents damn near every coach in the SEC now. But apparently Jimmy Sexton's been going around saying there's an SEC program that the coach is not going to be there past this fall. Sam Pittman, maybe they'll pinpoint Sam Pittman. Now, is that true? We don't know. I mean, that's an agent's role to go out here and send all these smoke signals, but certainly Arkansas did what they had to do to lock up Sam Pittman, gave him that non-compete, so he cannot leave for another SEC job. But let's kick it over to Sam Pittman here. Tuesday comments, just overwhelmingly appreciative of Arkansas. And interestingly, you know, I never heard a coach say something like this, but he wanted to be fair to the university as well as fair to his checkbook here. So interesting comments from Sam Pittman.
Went back to my original contract. The number of wins changed from 6, 7, 8 to 7, 8, 9 was a change in there, which we certainly understand. The program is different, you know, than what it was a couple of years ago. And I thought, you know, in contracts, Trey, really, we all want to be treated fair. That's it. It's not. And sometimes the eye of the beholder is not realistic. And in this case, maybe I was. I don't have any idea. But I was very, very pleased and happy with the contract and the incentives in it. You know, if I want to get paid more money, we need to win football games. And if we don't, then it goes down to 50% in a buyout if they happen to fire me and things of that nature, if we have a losing record. And so I thought it was fair for both. And I was very conscious that I wanted it to be fair for the university as well. You know, I think it put me about 9th in the SEC, and I've only been a head coach for 2 years. And I think to me, it was fair. I was ecstatic to get it. And I thought Jimmy Sexton did a wonderful job with his communication through myself. And you'd have to ask Hunter, but I think they have a really good relationship from this contract. And I'm pleased that this will be my last coaching job. The non-compete in the SEC is basically stating that stability that's what I wanted. I want to be able to use it in recruiting, and we certainly have as recently as 5 minutes ago. Well, non-compete, basically how it came is I shot my mouth off on Scott Van Pelt and ESPN, and then, you know, I was told, you shot your mouth off, you know, so, you know, you might as well sign it in there. Then once I got to thinking about it, I thought, you know what, this could help us in recruiting because, you know, again, we're one of eight programs of 130 that have the two coordinators and the head coach coming back for year three. So, you know, portal's been around a long time for football coaches. And so I thought we could sell some stability. That's why I wanted it in the contract. And I told the people of Arkansas that this would be my last job, and I wanted a piece of paper to confirm what my mouth said. In all honesty, even though you're not trying to think about it, you know, and as it continues to go longer and longer, Scotty, it wears on you some, and you don't want it to, you know, because you're getting paid, you have a job to do. But when we signed it, it was a relief and an honor, to be honest with you. It was an honor that the school thought enough of me to give me a longer contract and obviously financial benefit of that and things of that nature. But it was probably a relief, but it was also very humbling and an honor that I can. You know, as long as we keep winning and things, I can be the head coach at Arkansas for several years. And that was the goal of it. I mean, I'm so fortunate, you know, I mean, I really am. And so honored. I am. We were at a get together Tuesday, I believe. Tuesday night. And Hunter had the contract and we went up to his room and signed it. And then the university took all kinds of, you know, the faculty rep and you know, the administration and Mus and Coach Neighbors. And of course, Van Horn was working. And we all went to dinner, but it was a wonderful night for not only myself, but for Jamie as well. And it was really cool that we got to celebrate that night together. And just a privilege and honor to be the head coach at Arkansas, and that's how I felt.
And real quick, if you don't get the reference he's talking about with Scott Van Pelt, we'll kick it up here and we'll play it here in just a second. But, you know, the money quote is, he said this is going to be his final job. He's going to retire at Arkansas. So, and that led to some wondering, well, why the hell Sam Pittman need this contract extension and all this if he plans on being here. But pretty awesome quote here from Sam Pittman. Let's kick it over to that viral comment here from Scott Van Pelt.
Coach, through the years, I have shown resumes of the people in your profession, and it's remarkable what you guys go through. I just moved back home to Maryland where I'm from. I hope I never have to move again. And I look at your resume, and my gosh, you've been all over. And I just wonder, Sam, does it feel like for you that you are home, that this is a place where you can unpack boxes and just, as my grandma used to say, sit a spell?
You know, this statement's probably going to cost me a little bit of money one of these days, but this is it for me. I'm not interested in any other program. Arkansas is truly the greatest program in America to me. I grew up 75 miles from here. I have a lake home on Lake Hamilton, or on Lake Hamilton in Hot Springs. My wife's from Pittsburgh, Kansas, and we're home, and this is where we want to be, and this is be my last job.
I have a feeling some Arkansas fans out there might hear that and say, yes, sir.
I'm sure Arkansas fans have seen that before, but I just thought the rest of the SEC, maybe you missed it. And it's good to see Sam Pittman locked up for a couple more years there in Fayetteville. Going to end his coaching career with the Arkansas Razorbacks and cannot be more fired up for the future of that program. All right, but to close us out, let's kick it over to our interview with Mike Griffith from AJC's Dog Nation. Really appreciate the time here from Mike. Some really great stuff went all around the SEC. Spring meetings talk, Kirby Smart's extension, touched on Arch Manning's recruitment. The way Mike lays it out, Texas, I mean, it's baffling that they're even in the race at this point, given where the Texas program is, where the Georgia program is, and everything those two schools have to offer, as well as, you know, I thought an interesting question mark for the Georgia Bulldogs. Everybody's penciling them in as the SEC East champs. What's something that could hold them back? Mike Griffith here lays it out for us. Well, we're pleased to once again be joined by Mike Griffith. You can give him a follow at MikeGriffith32, and you know him as the AJC's Dog Nation Georgia beat writer. He's been named a National Beat Writer of the Year by the Football Association, the Writers Association of America. Mike, thank you once again for joining the show. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet, Michael.
And not only are you a heck of a beat writer here, Mike, but hey, when they open SEC spring meetings and the Paul Feinbaum show comes right up, you were the first guest on location, on the set. That must have been a treat. I know you've been on the show a number of times, but what was that like being on the beach with Paul there?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always interesting when you do the Feinbaum show, and John Talty of AL.com was on as well, the columnist there. So, look, there were a lot of issues, and I think Paul wanted to dive, you know, headfirst into it, and I usually don't waste too many words when it comes to dealing with some of the league issues and some of my outtakes on coaches and trends. And so I think it was more a matter of, you know, Paul just kind of wanting to get right into the issues right out of the gate, because there are a lot of pressing issues right now. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think they have the answers, but at the very least, I feel like Commissioner Sankey put the media as well as the presidents and ADs pointed in the right direction that this is going to have to go down before these things evolve and are solved.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've tackled this for Dog Nation. I'll put a link in the show notes to where people can follow along here. But what were your main takeaways from Destin at the latest SEC spring meetings?
Well, the complexity of the NIL. And you know, Michael, I know some fans just they don't want to hear anything about it. I understand that. You know, we're here to talk about sports and football and X's and O's and games and things like that. But the NIL has such an impact on the game and how these coaches have to manage their rosters and how college football is going to look. And you're going to see the changes as time goes by. It's going to have a little different look, feel, and sound to it. And so that's why we're all kind of wringing our hands over, my goodness, what's going to happen to college football is, you know, for the better or for the worse, we know there will be changes. So I think we, got a better outline of the complexities of the NIL, which I would sum up by saying, you know, the difference in state laws, you know, the difference in how coaches and programs approach it, and the complication now of the one-time transfer and how coaches now have to manage their rosters to the point where, you know, the 25-man signing class, they've eliminated that limitation just because some programs didn't have enough kids. You know, you're averaging about 20 kids per FBS program that are transferring. It's a really alarming number. So that is what I would say about NIL. And then the other thing, which I think is a lot more digestible and fun to talk about, yet still is frustrating in some respects, is the different schedule models, Michael. I know you've talked about the 3-6 and the 7-1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so where do you stand on the great scheduling debate in the SEC? 8-game, 9-game, what do you think is the best model moving forward?
Well, once again, frustrating because it's outside of the SEC's control. The 12-team playoff is what we're waiting on. And, you know, this alliance of the, you know, the Big Ten and the ACC and the Pac-12, they're blocking it. They're blocking it because they're concerned that the SEC would have too much of a competitive disadvantage. Well, and so the SEC has to respond in kind. They have to say, you know what, if we go to a 9-game schedule, and Nick Saban said this, if you're playing 9 SEC games, there's a pretty good chance you're going to play 5 teams of top 15 quality. That's a tough regular season compared to what the Big Ten or the ACC or the Big 12 or the Pac-12 is asked to do. So if you take on the 9-game schedule, you're putting the SEC at a competitive disadvantage for getting teams qualified for the 4-team playoff. We saw in 2018, Georgia was one of the best 4 teams, did not go to the playoff. There's been 32 playoff teams since we've gone to this 4-game format. None of them have had 2 losses or more. So there's the hesitation in the SEC expanding to the 3-6 model.
And how badly, based on your knowledge, does Georgia want to keep that Auburn game, which of course they wouldn't be able to if we stay at the 8-game and the 7-1 model? Is that a big concern there in Athens?
Well, I mean, you ask the fans about it, and they certainly want to keep the game. I mean, Florida's the number one rivalry. Auburn is number two. They didn't vote on it. I mean, maybe we stick with this current model. Now, the downside of the current model is that the teams don't play each other, quote unquote, often enough. So now we're really kind of picking our poison. Would we rather go 10 years before Georgia plays at Texas A&M, or would you rather keep Auburn on your schedule every year? You know, you can't have both as things stand until we get to the 12-game playoff, and then the 3-6 makes sense. The 3-6 model makes sense. Frankly, you know, rivalries to me are kind of phenomena of the time, right? Like right now, Michael, I would suggest to you that the Georgia-Alabama rivalry is more alive and well than probably any, maybe outside the Florida rivalry. You know, the Auburn rivalry, it's kind of been dominated by one team. Auburn is swimming. It's kind of what's happened to the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry, and I've covered that on both sides when I was the Alabama beat writer. I remember, you know, how Alabama felt about it. Gene Stallings really treasured that rivalry more so than having to play Auburn every year. And times change, right? Now I don't know what Alabama fans really make of the Tennessee rivalry. I know there's a lot of older Tennessee fans that appreciate the Alabama rivalry, but at the same time, it's probably cost Tennessee a trip or two to the SEC championship game to have to play Alabama every year when other teams don't. It's put Tennessee at a tremendous competitive disadvantage compared to other teams in the East. So do we keep the divisions and keep the schedule as is? Do we go to the 7-1 model that you talked about, where you'd only have one opponent that you would play every year and rotate 7? Or do you forge ahead with the 3-6 model and throw caution to the wind with the 4-team playoff and the folks on that committee to decide?
Now, this may be a tough question to answer, Mike, because it's you know, a little bit of a hypothetical, but if we do go to the 9-game model, how do you anticipate Georgia would handle their non-conference? Because it's interesting. Of course, they got the Georgia Tech game. Do you think they'd want to keep that? And then I know you've written about this over at Dog Nation. They got an Oklahoma series, Texas, Clemson, Florida State, Ohio State. I mean, would they have to drop some of these games, do you think, if we went to a 9-game model?
Well, they would for sure in 2026 because they've got 4 non-conference games scheduled. Mm-hmm. And if you have a 9-game conference schedule, that's 13. You're only allowed to have 12. So You know, and then you get into the situation of do you want to be playing 12 Power 5 teams? You know, part of the reason you play an FCS or maybe a group of five teams is to get a little bit of a break and to get some guys some playing time, some opportunities. That's how you develop depth. And you also help support those schools. Those schools rely on those paydays. So there's been plenty good logic for why you would play one or two of those cream puff games. You know, rather than, again, trying to, you know, go through this incredible challenge of playing 12 Power 5 teams. And meanwhile, you know, Clemson's over here, you know, waltzing and, you know, jogging backwards through a pretty watered down ACC, or Ohio State with their talent disparity they have. I guess Michigan finally won. I guess that's the first time in 7 years that Harbaugh's beat them. But I don't know that I think that's going to become a common occurrence all of a sudden. And Mark D'Antonio is no longer at Michigan State. They were able to contend. But, you know, I just think that the SEC has to be mindful of what's best for the conference and winning championships, you know, 12 of the last 16 national champions, last four in a row. Do you really want to mess with the formula that's led the SEC to that sort of dominance?
Now, something else, you've been all over this at Dog Nation, Kirby Smart and his contract extension. Of course, just won the championship, so there's got to come some reward at the end of that. What's the latest on this? When do you expect this to kind of be announced, and what kind of figures are we looking at here for Kirby Smart?
Yeah, I think you said the key word. When is it going to be announced? It's been decided on. We reported from the Georgia spring meetings a couple weeks ago. The board's pretty much decided on it. Now it's a matter of crossing the T's and dotting the I's, and when do they announce it? I would think 10 years between 100 and 115 million for Kirby Smart. I mean, it's crazy money, you know, but at the same time, you look at what's happened for Georgia since Kirby's come along. And, you know, certainly the commitment to facilities has been amped up. The recruiting has been the best in the country. You take a look at, you know, the success of the program. Georgia is the only program in the country that's finished in the top seven the last five straight years. And, you know, this fall will be the fifth straight time, Michael, that Georgia's been a preseason top five. Do you realize that Vince Dooley never had a preseason top five team? So, you know, the expectations, the performances have never been higher. And so, you know, Kirby at 46 years old will be paid, you know, commensurate with that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I realize, Mike, your colleague Jeff Centil, I mean, he's the recruiting insider there for Dog Nation, but I had to ask you about five-star Arch Manning, because that seems to be what every Bulldog fan wants to talk about. Any thoughts on Arch Manning's recruitment? And you know, I'm not going to ask you to make a prediction here, but certainly looks like the Bulldogs are sitting pretty with the nation's top prospect.
They are. And, you know, they've been the leader for quite a while. And it almost looks like it's coming down to Georgia by default at this stage, with Alabama having signed getting a commitment from another quarterback, one of the top quarterbacks in the country. And, you know, you look at Texas and, you know, Steve Sarkisian has certainly proven himself as an offensive mind. But, you know, managing a program is another deal. And, you know, I don't know how Texas lost to Kansas, Michael. That should never happen. I mean, I don't even know if they were even 500 last year. You're telling me that they're not, you know. So how many 10-win seasons has Texas had? It's just, I think there's a lot of uncertainty about that program and Steve Sarkisian as a head coach. I mean, obviously Texas has the resources. Austin is a fantastic city. You know, but if Arch Manning's goal is to, you know, and the family's goal is for Arch to be the greatest of the Mannings, I think they'd like to see him win a championship. And, you know, Georgia proved, I mean, if they can win a championship with Stetson Bennett, you know, my goodness, you know, why wouldn't Arch Manning think he could go there and win multiple championships? Now, all that said, it's never over until it's over. And, you know, Brian Kelly and LSU, you know, they're going to put a stake in this as well. Now, before this is over, I'm sure they have been making, I'm sure they haven't stopped, you know, pursuing. And Brian Kelly's a good coach. I don't know that LSU can get in this late. I think Florida tried, and I don't see that mix Manning and Florida. I think there's too much animosity between the family and, you know, family history and where Billy's at right now, Billy Napier, trying to get a lot done fast, doing some good, laying some good groundwork. But right now, Georgia is the it program. I mean, you know, you just take a look at that offensive line and the defenses that Kirby's had, and, you know, Todd Monken with that pro style offense. And I don't think Arch would be running the offense that Stetson's running, but JT Daniels showed you, you know, what this offense could be when he finished the 2020 season with the highest passer rating of all the returning quarterbacks in the nation. You'd see more of that air raid 4-5 wide spread concept that JT was so efficient at, actually leaving Georgia as the career passing efficiency leader.
Mm-hmm. All right, last thing for you, Mike. Really appreciate all your time. You know, you said it yourself, top five expectations, and, you know, the sky's the limit for what this Georgia team can accomplish. What is the biggest question mark you have for the Bulldogs heading into training camp?
Leadership. You know, you lost 15 NFL draft picks and four former starters. You know, you had 18 permanent captains last year, 18, and only four of those guys return for, you know, 18 game captains, and only four of those guys return. I wonder about the leadership. I wonder about the leadership at the field level. I've seen it over and over. And Michael, you know this. All the coaches are going to tell you they've got good leadership. No, I've never heard a coach say, you know, I'm really worried about our team leadership. They never say it, but there's a vacuum here. And now it doesn't necessarily mean it can't be filled. I was covering Tennessee in 1998 when a guy by the name of Manning walked out the door, and Tennessee fans thought maybe they'd missed their window, and old number 27 stepped up. There's never been another one like him. You know, they found that catalyst in Hall of Famer Al Wilson. You've got to have a catalyst in the huddle. I don't care whether it's basketball, baseball, football. You know, the coaches provide a framework. They provide the development. But at the end of the day, and anybody that's played sports knows this, when you're out there on the field in the heat of battle, you've got to have that dude. You've got to have that guy that can keep everyone's emotions at a peak. Or guys, you've got to have the players that you know you can count on, that you're never out of the game. And I'm just not sure who that's going to be for Georgia this year. I think last year there were multiple guys. But I think if we're being honest about it, I think that there's still some questions as to the player leadership at field level when you put it under the magnifying glass. And that's something that can only be developed over time. It's not like Kirby can, you know, put a special patch on somebody's jersey and say, well, that's it, you're the captain, lead the way. It's got to be developed by the actions and the investment that these players make in the offseason.
All right, just some outstanding stuff from Mike Griffith. Give him a follow at MikeGriffith32, and don't forget to check out all his work over at DogNation.com. Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate this.
Yep, appreciate it, Michael.
All right, so that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. Just want to say thanks again to Mike Griffith for joining the show. Really outstanding stuff. Always a treat to talk to Mike, one of the more knowledgeable guys in the SEC landscape. So it's just an honor to have him on the show. We're scheduled to have another – I got one more guest lined up for the rest of the week, potentially two. And again, I said I'm going to stop saying it, so I'm not counting on the big Tennessee homer to show up anytime soon. If he does, great. If not, you know, I'm not going to stop. I got to stop teasing this because I don't know when the hell it's going to happen. But hopefully we'll get Cousin Shane back on the line. But hey, at least you got me continuing to show up for you guys. And that's what I'm trying to do. I know it's the summer months, SEC football. We're under 90 days till the first Saturday action, less than 80-something for Vanderbilt's kickoff on Saturday, and of course Tennessee and Missouri kickoff on Thursday, so it's right around the corner. So stay with us all summer long. We'll be here giving you the SEC content you guys deserve. But that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We'll catch you on the next one.